Whoa, we're back.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous.
Episode 32.
This is Anna.
And Shireen.
And in this episode, we are going to shout out all our fans at the end and read some reviews and tweets you've given us and some emails.
Yeah, it's a nice fun time. Before that fun time happens, I get real sad and I talk about Syria.
That's right. And then I am going to talk about some wonderful political scandals in the past, including the Iran-Contra affair during the Reagan administration. Have you heard of it? Probably not. But you'll hear about it today. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Well.
Well,
it's episode 32.
32?
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
good. I just can't believe it.
Thank God.
Every time I'm just like, wow, what a number.
Wowzers! What a number.
Wowie.
I bet your eyes are all so excited for us to be back. Just kidding.
What? They should be excited.
You should be excited because the amount of times I podcast a week should be illegal.
Yeah, Anna's full-time job is literally just podcasting every single day. So I'm just so grateful she has time for us.
Today is Thursday, and I've maybe done 10 podcasts since Monday.
That sounds nauseating.
I went into one of our producer-engineer Nick's office this morning, and the first thing I said is, I never want to speak into a microphone again. And he turned and looked at me, and he was like, yeah. And that was our entire interaction, because we were both like, over it.
Yeah, this medium is just taking over the world. I didn't really realize people like podcasts that much, to be honest.
I used to love them.
You used to love them.
That's my only thing.
Yeah.
I used to listen to all the podcasts.
And now you've just gone over it.
Now I just look out the window a lot and forget where I am, and then kind of look around and be like, fuck, I hope no one saw me look out the window forgetting where I am.
Well, I mean,
but don't worry, I'm still here.
You're still here.
For
we're
now.
Here. It's episode 32. Yay, yay, yay.
Yeah.
To be frank, y'all, this episode is going to be kind of hard for me because talking about Syria is really sad for me.
Shireen. It's tough for Shireen.
You just have to be patient with me. I might be all over the place on this one, and it just makes me very sad all the time.
Well, before we get into that, how was your week? Positive notes.
It was a weird week.
Okay, all right.
I've been dealing with some health issues, to be honest, and I had to do some like blood tests and stuff this week, and I think I'm gonna be fine. But it was just a lot of humbling experiences.
Why? Because the doctor was like, "Shireen, you have 4 minutes to live."
Well,
and
okay.
Like,
you know, I wasn't going to bring this up because it's kind of disgusting, but I had to do a 24-hour urine collection. And
what does
that
mean?
Means,
you pee for 24 hours and collect it all?
You collect it all into a container.
Why
for
24 hours?
Because, well, my parathyroid hormone is apparently acting way more than it should. Like, it's overactive. I have an overactive parathyroid hormone, which...
It's always the thyroid.
It's always the thyroid. So I don't know what that means, but... So
it means everyone, you need to go get your thyroid checked out, because 90% of what is wrong with you somehow always comes back to the thyroid.
Yeah.
I am not a doctor, so do not fact check me on that. But from what I understand is everything always leads back to the thyroid.
Yeah. Well, it was a very humbling experience to just like funnel... To pee in this little funnel and just go into this container for... I couldn't leave my house all of Tuesday because I was just like... This is my life. I'm just collecting all my pee into this container. And then I had to bring that container to the doctor's office, literally just like carrying around a bucket
now,
of my pee.
I guess I'm struggling to understand what is so sad about that.
It was just...
Because that seems like a damn good time.
Oh
you don't get to leave your house. You just pee in a funnel.
I had a stress cry later that night just
you
being
save
like, I'm
on
alone.
Flushing.
All of-
You're saving
I did
water.
Save on flushing. I did save water. I was good
Look
for the environment.
Side.
I was good for the environment.
The oceans are like,
I can't believe
thank
I brought
you,
this
Shireen.
Up. I can't believe I brought
There's
this
nothing
up.
Wrong with that. We all have health problems. Remember that time I did an entire episode about my UTI?
That's actually very true.
Let me tell you.
So my week was strange, to say the least, but here I am, and we're doing this, and I guess I'm editing a short film right now, so it's a good thing I wasn't working on a commercial, or else I would have had to collect my pee on set or something.
You know what you should have drawn? Drawn a little smiley face on the bottle that you were peeing in, mm-hmm. and then, like, made it pretend like, thanks for filling me up, Shireen! And you're like, no prob! See you in an hour.
I did talk to myself a lot. I did not do that, but I did have a lot of conversations with myself.
I find when I'm doing something dark, like selling heroin
on the street,
I will draw a smiley face on the heroin like, and talk to it.
you'll make it personable. Or you're what's the word? Personification.
Personification. Sure.
College. Yeah.
You know, I like to give everything a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It drives myself crazy. But I'm just crazy.
Well, I do have different voices for different things. Like, I'll have a different voice when I'm talking to animals. Yeah, I have a particular baby voice when I talk to babies.
What do babies sound like to you?
I don't know if I do a baby voice. I have a voice when I talk to a baby.
Oh, you don't do a baby voice?
What
do babies sound like to you? If they were able to speak. Okay, no, I mean, like, if they were able to speak, not what they actually sound
I feel like they would just be like, feed me, leave me alone, I'm pooping now.
So, but that's how they would sound. Just like, oh my god, whatever. Like, that's the
like
tone.
Like a valley girl? I don't know.
Sure, okay. To me, they're all like, hey, baby.
Oh my god,
I'm like,
what?
Ew, baby, why your voice on
that reminds me of...
I love you.
That reminds me of this milk. Thing I heard about. They're making a Detective Pikachu movie.
Detective Pikachu?
But there's a video game called Detective Pikachu, but he sounds like a gruff old man because apparently he was a detective that turned into a Pikachu. So you have this adorable Pikachu that sounds like, hey, I'm a detective. And then they're making a movie about it and Ryan Reynolds is going to play Pikachu.
So this isn't an old man. This is as if you took the baby's voice and warped it in like a sound thing. So it's like, it would normally be like this.
But then you warp it, so it's like, hi, I'm a baby. How you doing, baby?
But like, you look at an adorable Pikachu and probably maybe an adorable baby, and then the weird, a different noise comes out. It's just jarring, that's all. It's just jarring.
Don't worry, Shireen, I'm just a baby.
Stop! I hate this a lot.
But that's what babies sound like to me. They just sound like warped voices. Like,
boy,
when I do voices,
I go, feed me. I'm a baby. I'm a baby. I'm a baby.
There you go,
I
you
like
get it.
To eat.
Now imagine that voice was on your pee bottle.
Thanks, Shireen. I was thirsty.
There you go.
That's disgusting.
No, it's not.
It's R. Kelly shit.
How so? Because you peed on it?
Yeah, I was just trying to make a joke about Alcar. He's just a very point and very laughable person.
Have you seen online that R. Kelly is banned from going to Wakanda?
What? No.
Some meme thing going around that they're not allowing R. Kelly to come to Wakanda.
I still haven't seen Black Panther. I need to make my way out there.
Ooh.
I need to see it. I know.
Your minority card has been revoked.
Ooh.
Just joking. I saw it.
Yeah, I heard it. I heard nothing but good things.
I'm not gonna lie, hated it.
What?
I really liked it. Please don't at me.
Controversial.
I actually really liked it. I thought it was so fun. Like, I'm a big Michael B. Jordan stan ever since his Wallace days.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
yeah, those were the days.
And let's just say, if Stringer hadn't have treated him so poorly, maybe he wouldn't have tried to go on and like take over Wakanda.
Yeah, exactly. We owe it all to Idris Elba and Stringer.
Stringer. You're calling
what did
him
I
Stinger.
Say? Stinger? Is
yeah.
it Stinger?
Yeah,
twice?
It's okay.
Stringer.
We forgive you.
I'm a terrible
As a humanity, we forgive you.
No, Stringer was my favorite character, so I'm very ashamed of myself right now. But yeah, we owe it all to Idris Elba, I think.
Idris made Killmonger.
I love him.
Sorry.
I think Idris Elba might be like one of the most attractive people on the planet.
Dude, Idris Elba is my pass.
He's...
Right? Okay, I'm not getting it from my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so we've covered all the we've covered all our weekly thoughts.
Yeah.
What did you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend? I went to a show, a musical show. I went to like a show where people play music, and it was a show. It wasn't a musical. It was fun, and I was like social, and I had a good time, and I hung out with people. And I danced, and then I went and then I danced by myself in my room again, because that's more fun sometimes, I think. What did you do this weekend?
I know I did something, but I literally couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Yeah. All right, so do you want to get into your super depressing Syria material?
Yeah, I might as well get into it. This month, you guys, it marks 8 years since the Syrian conflict has been going on. And during that time, almost 500,000 Syrians have been killed in the fighting. Over 1 million have been injured, and 12 million, over half the country's pre-war population, they've been displaced from their homes. And so I want to get into a little bit on the history about this conflict and what's going on in Ghouta right now, which is a city like 10 kilometers
from... Not a cheese?
It's not a cheese. I called my mom, actually, before I got here to ask her about the pronunciation of it, just because I didn't want to fuck it up, but she said Ghouta. Ghouta. So I'm going to trust my mom. And she obviously says it differently in Arabic, but who cares? But it's a city like 10 kilometers from Damascus, and it's the last rebel hold in Syria. And I want to get into that. But before I do that, I want to give you guys some background about what's going on in Syria. So in 2011, the Arab Spring was happening in Egypt. And Egypt had just overthrown their president. And so it was called the Arab Spring, and successful uprisings have been going on in the Arab world. And so this gave hope to Syrians for potential democracy. So after the Arab Spring happened in Egypt, 15 boys that were middle schoolers, they were in sixth grade, they wrote graffiti on their walls that essentially said, "Out with Bashar." And these boys were detained and tortured to death. And then their bodies were given back to their families. And that launched, series of protests and increased civil unrest in the country after they found that out. And it was really heartbreaking because the families of these boys, they begged the government to release their children. And the government told them to forget about their children and have new kids. And if the women needed help, ask the guards. Maybe they can help them with that.
To, like, impregnate them? Oh, my God.
So, there were photos of these children's bodies that were burned and they were brutalized. And this erupted in a lot of protesting, obviously. Justified protesting. And so before that happened, Bashar al-Assad... So, a little bit about Bashar. He wasn't meant to be the president of Syria. He had an older brother named Basil. I don't know how you say it in English, but Basil was the eldest son of Hafez al-Assad, who is Bashar's father. And so when Hafez al-Assad died of cancer in 2000...
Or was he murdered?
He wasn't murdered. I believe he did die of cancer. But Basil did die in a car crash in 1994.
Or was he murdered?
We'll never know. But when Basil died, Bashar was the next to rule. And he wasn't prepared to rule. He had no experience in politics. He had studied ophthalmology in Europe.
Which, if anyone knows, ophthalmology tends to mean that you murder millions of people for no reason. Exactly. Because you're, like, butthurt.
Yeah. So he was... basically pruned and prepped to be the next ruler as soon as his brother died.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is he acting out because he never really wanted to be leader, and so he's just like, I'll just kill everyone, so then if no one exists, then I don't have to be leader?
Maybe. I mean, that's very a reasonable assumption. But a lot of the people that have worked with Bashar they've said that he's not very smart.
That is the tightest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, they say that he... Let me try to see exactly what...
Do we have footage of him speaking?
Yeah, he's... I mean...
Is he like, did I do that? I don't know why he would be Urkel,
So, two former regime insiders that are now the opponents of the Assad regime, they told CNN their time with Bashar al-Assad was They called him a victim of his elder brother's cruelty, and I don't want to make him out to be a victim of, like, that's like a reason why he's like this idiot, but apparently he was bullied as a child, and no one really, and his father never gave him attention because he wasn't supposed to be the ruler. And so when he became the leader, he initially promised a more democratic, modern Syria, and he had married a British Syrian woman. And so him and his wife kind of presented this image of a more modern Syria. And this was 2000 when he took over, and he was 34. And then the rule at the time was that a president couldn't be under 40. But as soon as Bashar was president, they changed the rule to be 34.
Wait, so how did he become president?
His elder brother died in a car crash. And so he was just the next in line. And so
it's not even a presidency. It's just like a weird monarchy presidency.
Well, yeah, he's called the president, but it's 100% just like a dictatorship.
So,
and it's like just
it almost,
yeah,
just canceled itself out because there was just no one else in line.
Yeah, and I mean, his younger brother Mahid, he commands an elite division of the army, and he's accused of widespread human rights abuses. And his cousin, Rami, is the richest man in Syria. So his family is very corrupt and tight-knit. And so Hafez al-Assad, his father, he came into power through military coup. Like, he also wasn't in line to be any type of leader. But he came into power, he was in the military, and he overthrew the president at the time, and he became the leader, and he was president for 30 years until he died.
30-year presidency?
Yeah.
I'm gonna be real with you. That does not sound right.
No, it's not right at all. But anyways,
moderate?
No, he was pretty corrupt. And so when Bashar came in, the first 2 years of Bashar's presidency were honestly better than lessened a lot of political, he initially was very modern, and he
westernized,
and he brought in this like westernized ideal. And he, when Hafez was around, there wasn't any internet, nothing was allowed like that. And so when Bashar came in, he brought in this new wave, and everyone was like very into it.
They weren't allowed to have internet?
No. I mean, it was also like 2000, so it was like very new at the time. It was like newer, but like it was very like corrupt and tight-knit. But then Bashar offered this new democracy. But after 2 years, it all kind of went to hell, and the same thing started happening again. And his wife is basically this Marie Antoinette character, and WikiLeaks actually reported all the expenses that she had been having during the war, which is like an astronomical amount. So him and his wife basically live in this bubble where they're just so extremely wealthy, and their whole family has been corrupt this whole time. And
sounds like another leader we know.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about it. And every time there is a brutal crackdown in Syria, and Bashar is confronted with the things that he's been accused, and he's committed literally every war crime known, but he always says, they're not my forces. My forces, they're the forces for the government. I don't own them. I'm president. I don't own the country. They're not my forces. That's a direct quote, honestly, literally.
So is he just like a weird, delusional, compulsive liar?
He just denies everything. And
is he president, or does he deny that?
He's definitely president, but the thing is, he says that they're not in his command when he's the only one to give the order to bomb and torture his own people.
So is there any like quotes from the military being like, no, we have to respond to him?
Well, no, because no one dares to talk against him. I'm not really doing this justice. I wanted to be more coherent than this, and no, I'm kind of all over the place.
It makes sense to me.
So forward to 2011, and this Arab Spring is happening, and these boys have been burned and brutalized, and demonstrations happen all over the country, and these are civilians we're talking about. They're trying to arm themselves with whatever they can have against them. Their own government is attacking them. But before I get too far into this, we'll be right back. Over these last 8 years, The Syrian government has been attacking its own people, saying that they're attacking terrorists. And the funny thing is, before this all started happening, there were no terrorist organizations in Syria. Bashar al-Assad actually released terrorists from prison and invited them from other countries to Syria so he can have an excuse to show the Western world he was actually fighting terrorism when he was accused of fighting his own people and killing them. So
Jesus Christ.
It's very fucked up, and he's again committed just about every war crime under international law, and one of the worst of those is the use of chemical weapons, which is sarin gas, and this was invented by Nazis literally to kill people.
Right.
He's attacked with chemical weapons over 200 times in the last 7 years. And since 1997, sarin and other chemical weapons have been banned by international law. And one of the worst cities that have been pummeled by Bashar's regime and chemical weapons is Ghouta, which is 10 kilometers from the capital. And it's the most grotesque weapon because it affects... There's a video on CNN, 60 Minutes did a really good summary on this, and it was very hard to watch, but if you're interested, the link will be in the footnotes section of our website, but it discusses what a chemical attack in Syria looks like. And you see children that are gasping for air, emergency people are hosing them down to try to get the gas off of them, like trying to save them without, like, it's really hard to watch, and hundreds of children have died every day, and it's just when you're using weapons like and Ghouta is there's no military target in Ghouta. Sorry, I said Ghouta because that's how it's spelled, and I get confused. But it's the last rebel stronghold in Syria, and they're just civilians, and in other places in Syria, hospitals are being attacked, schools are being attacked, places where there are no reason for there to be a military target there. But he's just relentless in attacking his own people, and it's really absurd, I think, to me, that this has been going on for 8 years, and it's called a civil war, because it's not a civil war, it's almost like a massacre of these civilians every single day.
I don't understand, like, his reasoning for bombing his people is because there's just terrorists out there, but he just has no problem just killing kids all the time?
Well, he wants to stamp out any opposition against him. And that rebel uprising started in 2011, when they were fed up with the regime. So, in response to that, he invited these terrorists in I don't think he expected this to go on for this long, honestly. I think he expected to stamp out these people that were acting out, and then it would be over after he, like, made a statement or some shit.
Right.
But the fact that Syria is continually, like, not giving up, like, I think that's what has gotten a little out of hand. And, but yeah, so the people of Ghouta, Ghouta. I'm trying to remember how my mom said it. I'm pretty sure she said Ghouta. But they've been trapped for nearly 6 years, and they're being attacked daily. They're being killed, and they're being maimed. And children and elderly people, they're dying of malnutrition and lack of medication. And I'm gonna put an amnesty letter, basically, that you can sign and send to Amnesty International, and to tell the Syrian and Russian governments to end the attack and lift the siege. So there was a ceasefire that happened this past Sunday that should have stopped the bombing, but Bashar, literally 12 hours after that, continued bombing, saying that he was attacking terrorist organizations, and that the ceasefire didn't cover that. It didn't say he couldn't attack terrorist organizations, when really he was still attacking civilians.
He's just trash.
He's complete trash. And then he denies it. And there's a lot of accounts of what's happening in Syria, and I talked to my mom about this extensively today, and I found this article that was written by this woman that kind of was a teenager and grew up as this was happening, like around 2009, 2010, 2011, and It's she talks about how her family home was destroyed and how she, when she went, she left the Damascus airport, she knew she was never going to come back and she had to go study somewhere else and all this other, it's just, I'll list it in the footnotes section. And it's just, it's a little, it's very hard for me to talk about, and I can't even imagine what it's like for someone like her or just anyone that's lived through it to talk about it. And it's just be, I guess, be aware of that this has been going on, and it's not a civil war. When you see photos of children that are just dead on the side of the street, that's not civil war. That's not an equal fight. That's just a country that's maiming and destroying its own people because it's afraid of loss of power. It's just, I don't know. And then in the 2013, also in the same city of Ghouta, they had another chemical attack which killed hundreds of civilians, and most of them were children. So this city has been relentlessly targeted, and I mean, I can't talk about this without just, like, stuttering over my words. So I apologize for my lack of coherency. I'm just kind of sad. Really, I mean, like, it's just, it's a sad situation, and, so, the Syrian government, in response to the protests, let's go back to the beginning of this, they killed hundreds of demonstrators, and they imprisoned many more, and so the Free Syrian Army was established in July 2011, and, and defectors from the military announced this formation of the Free Syrian Army. So people from the military that realized it was fucked up, they formed this army and they began to create this front against the Syrian government. And even though most Syrians are Sunni Muslims, Syria and the government and the security establishment, and including Bashar al-Assad, they're members of the Alawi sect, and so they're not Sunnis. It's a sect from the Shia Muslim religion, but Syria in general, it's not a religious country. It's a secular country. There are Christians in Syria, there are Jewish people in Syria, and there are Muslims in Syria. But regardless, the protest never, they were like, people of all religions were in the protests. They never, like, divided themselves that way. But as it went on, extremist groups came into Syria because when you're desperate, you seek help from wherever you can get it, and no one was really intervening in Syria. So Hezbollah came into Syria, Hamas came into Syria, and since, 2016, Turkish troops have launched several operations against ISIS near the borders of Syria, and Israel has also carried out air raids against Syria that have reportedly been targeting Hezbollah and pro-government fighters. The first time Syrian air defenses shot down an Israeli warplane was in February 2018, which was last month. So it's been going on for a long time, and because it's been going on for so long, it's just become truly a clusterfuck of people with different motivations at this point. What started in the beginning as a protest against the government has now become very different terrorist groups convoluted with citizens and people that just truly want this to be over. And the disheartening part is, even if Bashar al-Assad does step down, whether it's through negotiations or forcibly or through death by my own hand, I can't foresee something happening that is good for the people of Syria at this point. Like, it's been destroyed. And, I don't know I'm not someone that thinks that democracy is, like, the key to everything. I think it's, like, a Western thing that we have convinced ourselves is better than everything else because we're Westernized and we think democracy is the way to go. But look at us now. We have fucking Trump as president. So Regardless, the fighting in Syria is still continuing, and Eastern Ghouta is the main place that's escalating. And Syrian forces, backed by Russian warplanes, last week in February, it resulted in hundreds of civilians' deaths. And it's been the last rebel stronghold since 2013. So I think that's why the Syrian government has been shamelessly attacking that place, even though the majority of the casualties, if not all the casualties, are civilians. And even if they weren't, like, that's still fucked up, using chemical weapons on your own people. But now the Syrian conflict has been going on longer than World War II. And
are
the
you
war
serious?
Is yep, longer than World War II, and it's caused profound effects beyond the country's borders because many Syrians have left their homes to seek elsewhere safety elsewhere. As of February 2018, the UN Refugee Agency has registered over 5.5 million refugees from Syria, and an estimated more than 6.5 million internally displaced persons within the Syrian borders. And Lebanon, Turkey, and Jordan are hosting most of the refugees. And there's still many of them are trying to escape onwards to Europe for better conditions.
Because these places can't.
No, of course, and they're all these places
all these
are
refugees,
tiny,
which is unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate, but in 2017, about 66,000 refugees reportedly returned to Syria, with much of Syria in ruins, obviously, and a population deeply traumatized by war. I think it's just very clear that rebuilding Syria is going to be a lengthy, difficult process that's going to take decades. And, until I read this, I don't think I really put together that it's been going on longer than World War II, but I think that should put into perspective a little bit just how much bloodshed has been going on in this. And if you look at the country of Syria, it's a very small country. Like, it's not... The fact that millions of people have been... displaced and 500,000 have been killed, and the fact that it's that small of a country, like, that's most of the population, you guys. Like, it's, you're destroying an entire people, and it's one of the oldest cities in the world. Damascus is one of the oldest cultures in the world. And I mean, I can't even imagine what my parents must feel. Just, and I still have family there, and we talk to them. I mean, we check up on them all the time, but it's really hard to. I mean, again, I feel like I have a lot of survivor's guilt, and it's really hard not to feel that when you are living in America. And if I get this sad about something, I can't even imagine what it's like to grow up and see your entire home disappear.
I have a question. Where does your family that still is in Syria live?
I have some family in Damascus and some in Hama. My mom is from Hama.
What's their like conditions like?
I mean, it's not great.
Do they still live in homes? Like, what is the physical condition of these cities that they live in still?
They still live in apartment buildings, and they still try to go to school. Sometimes they can't go to school because of, like, bombings and stuff. But
they haven't been attacked in any way, or?
Well, the family that I have, like, sometimes the water is shut off for weeks, and they don't have any electricity, they don't have any water, they can't go get food, it's more, they've been on the outskirts of a lot of the problems, thankfully. So, I do have a cousin that was arrested and tortured, though, so that's another story. And he didn't talk about it I don't think he even talked to anybody about it until, like, 3 years later, because he was traumatized, which is understandable. But it's just, and Russia has been the biggest Syrian ally, the Syrian government ally, and Bashar and Putin have this, like, disgusting bromance with each other where they're just, like, they're just evil, and I hate them so much, and I don't know what the point of my segment is other than to tell you that Syria is not doing so hot, and neither am I. And just be aware of what's going on. And please, if you have the time and the energy and the emotional threshold, look at the links that are going to be in the footnote section. The 60-minute segment on Ghouta was very informative even though it was hard to watch, it's very necessary to watch, because that's what's going on in your world right now. That's what's going on in this really beautiful country. And this past November, Russia, they shut down a UN investigation about who's responsible for the chemical attack. So you know something shady is going on, because if you use chemical weapons over 200 times over the past several years, you're doing something that is inhumane and like, why? Like, why hasn't this been stopped? Like, why, when you have clear bad guys, whether it's Bashar, whether it's Putin, when you have clear bad guys that are doing disgusting evil things, you would like to think that this is a world where they're punished or reprimanded, but it's not, and it's been going on for years.
I think it's politics.
And that's so unsettling. I hate it so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing is, no one goes in there to stop anything because they feel like it's going to cause, like, political strife. If we go, we're going to upset Russia. If we go do this, we'll upset Iran. Like, nobody wants to do anything because no one wants to, like, start a domino effect.
Yeah.
Which is trash, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, if someone is murdering mass civilian populations with children involved, like, you should be able to just go in there and shoot the guy in the fucking head. But, I mean, the good thing is just know that Bashar will get his.
I mean, I hope so.
He has such terrible karma.
I really hope so. But seriously, look at the articles that I have butchered in my trying to retell this. It's very hard for me to get my thoughts together, and I was honestly dreading talking about this all week, and even all of today. I was trying to, like, formulate my thoughts and have a good way of talking about this, and instead I, like, jumped around everywhere. But, there are a lot of good articles. Most of them are from Al Jazeera. A lot of them are, I mean, I was very happy with the Western reporting on this, even though if it's kind of late, it's been years and this is when they are trying to be helpful. But better late than never, I suppose. But look at the stuff. Just stay informed. And I left my heart in Syria a long time ago, and it's just there all the time. So, I'm sad.
Yeah, well, just pray on the fact that someone is going...
I want to kill him with my own hands.
...to put a bazooka up his butthole.
I really hope that will happen. I hope I'm the one that does it.
Yeah, I hope so as well.
Just for my
Maybe we'll sanity. Do it live on the podcast.
Oh my god. We are. Bashar al-Assad. We have him on as a guest. Pretending that we're like fans.
And we just torture him.
Yeah.
Is that dark?
Sorry. I think I rambled on for a long time, but I was just really upset.
It's okay. It's life.
Yeah. I hope you guys followed me. And if not, I apologize.
I feel like it was quite... followable.
I think I repeated myself a couple of times, but I think it's only because I'm so... I don't know. What's beside myself is the word. Beside myself. Words.
Naturally. And on that note, we'll be right back. And we're back.
So what do you have to talk about today, Anna? Anna June.
Ice cream! I'm just joking.
How much do we like ice cream?
Oh, just flipping on its head so hard. No.
No ice cream?
No ice cream.
Okay.
So, TD, I was going to give you a little history lesson. A history lesson. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if you guys have been reading the news, but...
I mean, it is pretty disheartening a lot of the time.
Yeah, you know how, like, Russia just, like, casually meddled in our election and did a bunch of fake shady shit, and, yeah. Like, for some reason, Trump is still in office because nobody cares, because there's just no way to make a scandal worth anyone's time these days.
No.
And it's, like, Republicans have that way of denying everything, mm-hmm. and everything's, like, a double standard, where it's like, well, if it's us, there's no problem, but if it's a Democrat, burn them at the stake, you know? Like, just very casual hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Which is just so insane. I wish I could punch Marco Rubio in the face. You know, I wish I could do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I wish I could punch old Trump Dogian. I don't know what that means, Trump Dogian, but Anyway, as I was kind of looking at this, like, Trump-Russia scandal, I started to think back to past scandals where things were just slowly kind of just brushed over and a presidency mm-hmm. was just allowed to continue even though some super, super shady shit happened.
Whoa, that sounds familiar.
Yes, it's like every week here. And that took me back to the old Reagan administration.
What? Oh,
do you guys remember Ronald Reagan?
Throwback, the first celebrity president.
Yeah, he's, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you remember Ronald Reagan for beating Jimmy Carter out in the 80s. Anyway, so, no, early 70s, 80s? Yeah, no, 70s. He beat Carter out in the 70s
mm-hmm.
and continued his term into the 80s. Sorry, I don't know why I just said the 80s, probably because I have nothing going on in my life. Anyway, now I'm going to talk to you about the Iran-Contra affair, also known as Iran-Gate, also known as Contra-Gate, also known as the Iran-Contra scandal. And this happened, like I said, it happened in the second term of the Reagan administration. And I'll give you a brief overview and then I'll get into some details.
Okay.
So basically the CIA, working with like senior administration officials in the White House, they decided that they were going to sell arms/weapons to Iran, even though Iran at the time was in a arms embargo, because in 1979, Iranian students stormed the American embassy in Tehran and took 52 Americans hostage.
What?
And so U.S. President Jimmy Carter said, so, it gets crazier.
Oh, God.
So these administration officials, along with the CIA and quote-unquote Reagan, nobody really knows if he knew what was happening. He for sure knew. Even though at the time they were going around, American diplomats were going around as part of Operation Staunch to be, like, very intense and lecturing other nations about how they shouldn't sell weapons to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and that they're applying all this pressure to be like, don't do it, it's bad, they're a bad place. They decided to sell arms to Iran.
Hmm.
Now, why did they do this? Publicly, they claimed it was because they wanted to get some hostages back from Hezbollah in Lebanon, who had, I think, like 4 or 5 hostages held at the time. So they were like, if we sell weapons to Iran, Iran will negotiate, because Iran has connections to Hezbollah in Lebanon, that Iran will negotiate the releasing of these hostages.
Okay.
Well, it gets more complicated than that.
Of course. It's never that simple.
So. Oh, honey. I literally cannot explain how complicated it gets from here. So, like I said, Hezbollah, it's a paramilitary group with Iranian ties that are connected to the Army of the Guardians of the Islamic Republic, or excuse me, Islamic Revolution. Their plan was to ship weapons to, their plan was to have Israel ship, Israel's always involved, weapons to Iran, and then the U.S. would resupply Israel and basically receive the payment that the Israelis got from Iran. So it's like this kind of like around the way.
Before Venmo was a thing.
Yes. No one could Venmo. There was no PayPal. Yeah. You couldn't be like, what's your email? I'll send you $25. Because that's all it cost. Inflation. Now it's like $4 million. But I'm just kidding. Don't quote me on that math at all. I don't know how to do math. So, and then the Iranian recipients, aka the government, said they would do anything in their power to have the hostages released. So this was all, the plans for the most part were devised by Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the National Security Council in 85. And then this motherfucker decided that they would use the money they made from the proceeds of the weapon sales to fund an anti-basically socialist government fighting group called the Contras in Nicaragua.
All right.
So they were using money selling weapons in Iran, which was already not okay.
Right.
To fund an anti-government, like, rebel group in Nicaragua.
Why are they concerned with Nicaragua?
Because there was like a so they wanted to fund the right-wing rebel groups mm-hmm. because Nicaragua was ran by the socialist Sandinista Junta of National Reconstruction government in Nicaragua, obviously in Nicaragua. So the U.S. didn't care for this group. So they wanted to basically overthrow them. And by doing that, they were literally training Nicaraguan rebels mm-hmm. and giving them weapons.
Wow. That funding sounds that, so familiar.
Funding that by selling weapons to Iran through Israel.
Wow. Why did America fucking do this?
Because America's trash. Also, under the Broad Amendment, under the Boland Amendment, funding the Contras by the government had been prohibited by Congress. So Congress had already been like, no, we are not funding rebel groups in Nicaragua.
And they still did
it. They did a lot of shit they shouldn't have done.
Fuck that, man.
So a lot of their arguments were that if they didn't sell weapons to Iran, then Iran would fall under the influence of Kremlin and the Soviets, and they would get the weapons. Because Iran at the time was in a war with Iraq. Mm-hmm. So they needed weapons. They needed parts to fix their weapons. They needed help. Mm-hmm. So America's like, well, we can't let them fall to the, you know, powers of the Soviets, because that's where they'll get their weapons. Because they'll get these weapons regardless. So we got to be the ones to give it to them. And at the same time, Ayatollah Khomeini was getting his whole Islamic revolution, and he was like talking about overthrowing governments in Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and most of like the Persian Gulf, and that was scaring the U.S. They were like, oh no, mm-hmm. we can't have this. We need to get in there and basically create relations between the U.S. and Iran again in case things go bad.
Right.
And so they believed that there was like this kind of moderate group in Iran, that was headed by Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, and he was a powerful speaker, and he was apparently supposed to be the successor of Khomeini, a potential successor of Khomeini, and he was just a lot more, like, moderate versus, like, super Islamic Republic-y of Khomeini, if you will. And they wanted to create like a reapproachment with the U.S. And they believed that Rafsanjani had the power to order Hezbollah to free the American hostages and establish relationships with them and all that. But to this day, it remains unclear if Rafsanjani actually wanted to create relations with the U.S. again, or if they were deceiving the Reagan administration officials who wanted to believe that he was this person that he was making himself out to. His nickname, Rafsanjani's nickname, was The Shark, according to a British journalist.
The Shark.
They describe him as a man of great charm and formidable intelligence, known for his subtlety and ruthlessness, whose motives in the Iran-Contra affair remain completely mysterious.
Wow.
Yes. So they're already dealing with someone that they can't even 100% trust.
No.
And so that gets very muddled. The whole situation gets muddled. Only a few of the hostages are released, and it's one by one, and not even all of them are released. So that's even more muddled. And a lot of the negotiations between like the top official administration members of the White House and Iran, like, it's fucked up. They're meeting in like West Germany, they're meeting in like Turkey, they're meeting all over.
It's super fucking shady.
Yeah, they're being super shady, and it's not clear what's really going down. And, you know, like I said, not even all the hostages were released. And Lebanon or Hezbollah released a few hostages and then like took a few more. It was just a mess. So, basically it came out that this all came out from a leak from a senior official in the Army of Guardians of the Islamic Revolution. He went to a Lebanese magazine called Ashira, and he exposed the entire arrangement on November 3rd, 1986. And the Iranian government confirmed the story.
Wow.
And then
they were just like, yep, that's true.
Yeah, because what do they have to lose? They're right. Just like, yeah, we're all shady. What do you know? And then 10 days after the story was published, Ronald Reagan had to do a press like conference from the Oval Office, in which he was just kind of like,
my bad. Like, it's just straight up like, yes, the weapons were definitely sold.
So they just came clean.
But he claimed that the U.S. had not traded weapons for hostages, that they really wanted to address relations. And then he comes back and he says, actually, it was to basically get the hostages out. And then the thing about the fact that they were using the money to, like, you know, fund the Contras came out. And then they were just like, but eventually the sale of weapons to Iran was not deemed a criminal offense, and the charges brought against the individuals that supported the Contras was dropped. And then they got like lesser charges, because at the same time a bunch of documents just went missing. They were destroyed, and they believe, I think, Oliver North destroyed them or something. I don't know. Some shady shit happened. And they refused to declassify certain documents. So a lot of the investigation basically just got muddled some more. And then this also went in to the George H.W. Bush. The, like, indictments and the convicted whole thing went into the George H.W. Bush presidency, who pardoned all the people involved. So, like, basically, not much happened, and
there weren't really any repercussions.
Right, and it didn't really affect Reagan's presidency. It was a scandal for sure, but he was able to kind of ride it out and just do kind of like awkward denials, but at the same time kind of being like, my bad, you know, sometimes things get fucked up.
I think also maybe that was because Reagan was likable, because when Watergate happened, which was also fucked up,
which you could argue this is a little more fucked up.
Yeah, I would
argue.
This is,
like, heavily more fucked up.
But, like, Nixon, I don't think, was as likable. So I think that's why people are, like, out with Nixon. But because Reagan was already this, like, liked celebrity figure, maybe they were just like, oh, just Reagan. I can trust him still. He's a trusting guy. You know, like how people just have a trusting face or some shit.
It was all bad.
That sounds awful.
And also, presidents in the executive branch, they can't just spend money however they want. They can't just decide that the money they get from arms sales can go fund this Contras.
But no one stopped them at the time.
Yeah. That has to go through Congress. And so it's like a real, like, subversion of the rule of law.
Right.
It just, like, broke the law. It's just not okay. And
it was glossed over.
It was an interesting example of, like, the post-truth politics. It's just, like, beyond anything that's
post-truth. That was like, there's like so many phrases now that are just like fake news or post-truth or what's another thing? It's like alternative, or what's the fact one? Alt facts or whatever. There's so many things that shouldn't be. I don't know. Politics have made the truth into this, this muddled concept.
If you don't know what post-truth politics is, it's a political culture in which debate is framed largely by appeals to emotion disconnected from the details of policy and by the repeated assertion of talking points to which factual rebuttals are ignored.
Exactly!
So it's just like, truth becomes like a secondary thing.
Yeah,
it's just like, yeah, but wasn't that illegal? Okay, well, you need to slow down.
It's so absurd, because the truth and facts, those should be pretty much synonymous, but they're not.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, 24-hour news cycle and false reporting hasn't helped, and the ubiquity of, like, social media is fucked. Anyway, that was kind of like the opening of that world, where you're like, that's a fucking scandal if I've ever heard one.
I mean, like, it just proves that America has been fucking putting its fucking nose where it doesn't belong time and time again, over and over and over, and it gets other countries so fucked because of it. It's so stupid.
Yeah. I think they say, like, the biggest problem with what happened was that, like, Reagan was, like, kind of, like, very indifferent to his mistake.
Oh.
And that is very comparable to the Trump-Russia scandal, because Trump is kind of like, what about it?
Right.
Doesn't I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not
affected directly. Like, yeah.
And it's like Reagan, there's like notes and stuff from like Oliver North and more of like Secretary of Defense at the time, Caspar Weinberger. Like all these people have like kind of, they denied it, but then it kind of came out anyway that he was involved. Like Oliver North had like a note from people written that said that Reagan had basically approved every step of it.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so there's so much, like, you'll never really know the truth because right. of, you know, how politics work, but...
And we only get the secondhand information, which is...
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like that's a pretty huge scandal.
That's huge! And it was I've just kind of like... I've never heard about it before today, honestly. I've truly never heard about it before today.
Because why would you? No one even thinks about
that's
it.
That's not going to be in your
You know how I even really heard about it? There's that movie American Made, but with Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, I bought it on iTunes. it was just one of those nights, okay? I won't explain. Yeah. I think it was like Christmas time. I was at my parents' uh-huh. house.
Well, how was it?
I mean, it's an entertaining movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, it's a part of it is that the CIA hires this flight. And this is, it's based on a true story. They hire this airline pilot who's already like smuggling like weed and cigars
mm-hmm.
to basically fly weapons to South America.
To, of like, course that's
to
Tom
give
Cruise.
Weapons to the Contras a as well. And like bring them back to train them in America and take them back. Yeah, it was such a Tom Cruise movie. It's actually a pretty entertaining movie if you can just like look beyond the fact that you're looking at a Scientologist acting. But like kind of acting. But
yeah.
you know, it's or Tom Cruise is entertaining enough yeah. that you can watch the movie, but it's also very informative of like what was going on at that time and how the CIA yeah. just did not give a fuck and the White House didn't give a fuck.
Good to know.
Fucking 70s and 80s, dude. No one yeah. gave a fuck.
I knew that movie was about a real story. I just didn't know what story. Now I know.
It's pretty interesting. And it kind of, I was starting, they were like talking about it in the movie and I was like, wait, what the fuck? And then I read the entire Wikipedia on the Iran-Contra affair and I was like,
you were like,
what the fuck? And I read it a while ago, and I remember being like, I have to talk about this on the show, but I kept, like, pushing it off because I just had other stuff coming up. But more and more now that the, like, Mueller investigation is going on and that we're just so blatantly ignoring this,
yeah.
just blatant,
blatant
fuck
ignoring.
Up
yeah.
by Russia coming, it's just wild to me. And now that they named all, like, 13
oh,
of those
yeah.
people, was it 13? It was something like that.
It was in the teens.
And I called it first name on the list, Yevgeny. I don't know if you guys remember, but at the day it came out, I tweeted, there's for sure a Yevgeny on this list.
I do
first
remember that.
First name on the fucking list was Yevgeny.
Wow.
Guys.
You got some powers.
Guys. And it's all because I used to watch that Adult Swim show, Delocated, which I love. Like, Eugene Merman's character's name is Yevgeny, and he only makes vodka-themed stand-up jokes. And I just was like, there's gotta be a fucking Yevgeny involved.
Wow. That's wild.
Fucking Ronald Reagan, dude.
That's wild.
His press conference was just like,
I need to be more prepared.
This is awkward.
I need to prepare myself more. My segment was so convoluted compared to yours. I need to be more prepared.
Well, I mean, I just like wrote down that I'm not even getting into 90% of the details of this thing.
No,
it's
I'm sure.
So crazy. And I recommend you guys go to the Wikipedia. I posted a bunch of articles on it. I will post a bunch of articles in the footnotes, but it is so wild. Like, here is the quote that President Reagan said on November 13th after it went, I want to say viral, but viral didn't really exist back then. Well, basically when the news came out that...
Mm-hmm. When it went public.
When it went public. Ronald Reagan says, my purpose was... ... to send a signal that the United States was prepared to replace the animosity between the U.S. and Iran with a new relationship. At the same time we undertook this initiative, we made clear that Iran must oppose all forms of international terrorism as a condition of progress in our relationship. The most significant step which Iran could take, we indicated, would be to use its influence in Iran to secure the release of all hostages held there.
That's not what happened, though.
No, because they just
yeah.
fucked it up. They fucking muddled it up so bad because there was no real intelligence.
Yeah.
They were really going off, like, you know, anything and everything. Like, literally, officials would go, like, Casper, Secretary of Defense, would go and try and meet with top Iran officials, and they would just send over their, like, lackeys. And
wow.
they would just be so offended by that and
mm-hmm.
be like, well, what the fuck are we doing here?
Wow.
And then apparently they told Reagan to just stop it, but Reagan just kept going. And I don't... Obviously, we don't know. This is all very much like them saying this and that. We will never really know. I mean, we kind of know because of, like, some things. But, like, most of the documents, like, the pertinent documents were destroyed between, apparently, November 21st and November 25th of 1986.
Yeah.
They fucking covered their asses.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Fucking well, United States National Security Council, you sketch balls back in the day. Now you mostly have to deal with fucking North Korea, but back in the day, y'all were on some shit.
Fuck, man. Man. Should we get into how much we love our fans?
Should we? Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. We have gotten a lot of really lovely feedback from you guys and gals. I mean, when I say guys or dudes, I mean that as a very gender-neutral term. But regardless, we got a lot of nice feedback from so many of you guys via email and Instagram and Twitter. And so we wanted to just, like, shout you guys out a little bit.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
Let's start with our emails.
All right, do you have them up?
Yeah, I do.
I do not. I just have the Twitter up.
Okay. so we got a really lovely email from, Madison. She says, Anna and Shireen, I have recently discovered your podcast and I absolutely fell in love. I find that as a society, we ignore Middle Eastern news. In addition, most of my friends are culturally similar to me, white, in parentheses, haha. And it's hard to get a real point of view on these problems. Your podcast is extremely informative without being condescending and has opened my eyes to so many issues I've never heard before.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. So thank you. That was really nice. Thanks.
Yes, that is very nice. I hope this Iran-Contra affair really opens your eyes to what a bullshit fucking political world we live in.
Yeah. And then, do you want to read some tweets and I can read another email after?
Sure.
Yeah.
I really like this one from Tara Kalashane at Research Buzz. I read this out loud to some of my coworkers. I just thought it was so funny. I dislike long podcasts. I dislike interview podcasts. This did not stop me from being riveted to Ethnically Ambiguous this week. I don't even mind that I only vaguely know the famous person they started mentioning halfway through the show episode.
Thank you.
I like that.
It's like, it's despite all odds.
Nothing here would have told me I would have liked this. Yeah. But here I am, goddammit.
Not only that, but you tweeted at us, so thank you.
Yeah.
Took the energy to do that. The next person I want to shout out is this lovely lady, Kayla Farhang. She also tweeted, or she Instagram messaged us as well, but her email states that she's a 22-year-old Iranian-American woman, and she just wants to thank us so much for creating Ethnically Ambiguous. She says, everything I know about my culture and identity came from my father and the books I've picked up. And never in my life have I had an Iranian professor, but I remember when I was 19, she took a class on Middle Eastern politics, and no one talks about us being Middle Eastern people, I'm assuming, and it's really shitty to be basically invisible because of other people's ignorance.
And snaps.
And she goes on to say just her experiences being a radical political nerd based in Minnesota, which is the whitest place on earth, she says, and everyone is confused about where she's from. But basically she says, to hear the voices of women who look like me, who belong in the same culture as me, on a semi-mainstream media speaking the truth is incredibly powerful and inspiring to me. I look up to you both and just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, the fact that someone looks up to me is...
That's strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, honey.
I just talked about how I peed in a bucket for a day.
And I literally sell heroin with smiley faces on the bags.
I want to read this one from Russia, though. Can you open the email so you can read the one from Russia? We got an email from Russia.
You want... I know, I read it.
Oh, no, but, like, I want to read it on air, quote-unquote.
You want me to open the email?
Well, because I already read one, so I thought you could read the next one.
Well, let me read a tweet, then you can read that one.
Oh, okay, copy that. Because
I ain't even opening the email.
Oh, okay, copy.
Oh, that's how trash I am. No, Shireen, I'm not opening the email. I'm not going through the extra work of opening a new tab. This one is from Krisha Stroshine. I'm probably not saying that right. At Krisha Shine. At Ethnically and Big. Just started listening to you ladies and love the show. I am white, and I'm sorry we ruined everything, especially the hummus. Hashtag hummus without peppers. Hashtag how stuff works.
I saw that one. That's a really good one.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you for your apology.
We appreciate you.
Yeah. I'll accept your apology.
We'll take that apology on the behalf of all white people.
That's really funny.
So thank you for tweeting at us and thank you for listening.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good one. So Anna and I got this email to our Ethnically Ambiguous email, which is ethnicallyamb@...
No, it's not. Isn't it just...
What is it? Hold on. Ethnically and big. It's ethnicallyandbig@gmail.com. So
look, one day we'll learn things, okay?
She says, Hello, girls. My name is Rena, and I'm writing to you to say thank you for all your great work. I've heard about your podcast from the Daily Zeitgeist. Woohoo! And I was pleased to listen to you. She's from Russia. She doesn't watch TV, which is a good thing, because there's nothing but propaganda and entertaining shows. She says, anyway, I rarely read any news on the Middle East, but being born in Russia, you have no conception about brown people, so your show has been a great source of view and opinions for me, and your personal stories and notes about cultures left me smiling and lighthearted. And she says, she would like us to know that not every Russian is an evil being, and there are woke people out there, so there are ears and hearts to your words. Thank you so much. And I do know that. My best friend lives in Russia, and I love her. She's Russian. And I do know that Russia is not filled with evil people, but I just hate your government. I'm sorry.
You should read the last part.
Yeah, I'm amping up to that. She says, you're wonderful. Keep up the good work. P.S. I have listened to all your episodes from the start, and now I'm really concerned about Shireen. I hope you get paid for podcasting after joining How Stuff Works. Otherwise, I feel really sad. And that's the end of the email.
That made me laugh. I was like, damn, Shireen. Yeah. You've made your financial situation very clear on this show.
If you were concerned before, you can even be more concerned now because my body is falling apart. No. Okay. No, but real talk, I'm fine. And
she's going to get paid.
Yeah, I'll be okay.
She's gonna get paid more than me, let's be real.
That's not true. But I make it work. I'm a freelancer. Like, sometimes work is dry and sometimes it's not. But I'm alright. I'm still here. I'll be here for a while. Don't get sick of me, please.
And we sold out. We selling ads now, so oh, yeah. Shireen is gonna get paid, don't worry.
Yeah. When you hear an ad, don't get mad at us. Be happy that we're making money.
Okay, just be happy we're being paid. And I know the ads are just going to be like ads, but look.
But there'll be our voices on them, yeah. And we'll be like fun and like we
money,
won't.
Money in our pocket.
We'll never say an ad, I think. Well, I don't anticipate ever saying an ad that I don't really believe in. Like, I'm not going to back something that
it's
I don't
It's true.
Like.
I turned down an ad back at Feral Audio because I didn't care.
That's very true.
For what they were trying to
and
sell.
And I already got what they had. I already received the one of them, and I was like, I was into it, but Anna wasn't, so I was like, no! And so, you gotta stick together, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's another tweet from Elmira Fateh Azam. I hope I'm saying your name right. At Elanur. You guys don't know this, but I feel like you are my best friends, because I've been listening to you for 2 weeks. More episodes, please. Elmira, you're our best friend. And Shireen and I, we only talk to each other. We have no friends.
No friends.
We mostly hang out with animals. Cute
I
dogs.
I love animals.
Like our producer, Andy.
Our producer, Andy?
She's a puppy.
Might be the cutest dog ever.
And, you know, that's the life we live.
I screenshotted. Oh, yeah. Also, we get a lot of nice mentions. Sometimes people are listening to us and they, like, will mention us in their stories. And
yes, thank you for
that. I really, really love that. It just makes us feel loved. And this lady, girl, person, Molly Fox Vintage, she said on Instagram, she's only listened to a handful of shows, but I absolutely love and appreciate what you're doing. It's super educational and enlightening for a white British person to talk and listen to this. There's a similar broken madness happening here with Brexit currently, and it's just so bloody beautiful to hear yours and other inspiring human stories.
Nice.
From different experiences globally. Here's to a future of togetherness and true unbiased privilege checked equally. Equality.
Wow,
privilege
so
checked
nice.
Equality. Keep it up.
And so well written.
I know.
Y'all are smart out there.
We have some smart fans.
Good. Here's another tweet from Mia St. Mia's Cathedral. Cathedral. I like saying it that way. At Ethnically and Big, thanks for helping me learn and gain much needed information on what's going on in the Middle East. I now read Al Jazeera on the reg, and you have become a staple in every work day. Heart.
That's so nice.
Heart
Al Jazeera, yes.
Yeah, you gotta get with that.
Honestly, I'm not really proud of this episode for myself. I really am not happy with the way I reported on Syria, and I wish
I learned a lot.
I wish I was more coherent, but speaking of Al Jazeera, though, just go and read the articles that I mentioned because they explain it a lot better than I can.
Yeah, and I've had episodes like that, too, where I feel like I'm not doing my greatest.
Yeah, I think I've just been emotionally all over the place and just
understandable. You didn't draw a smiley face on your pee jar.
Yeah. But, like, I'll come home and I'll be, like, in a decent mood and then I'll, like, go on Twitter and see, like, a video of a like a Syrian hospital being bombed, and like Al Jazeera posted this video, a very graphic video on Twitter that we retweeted, but it was about how one person has been killed every 15 minutes in Syria in the last 4 days. And there's like a father carrying his son and bodies of children, and I think I would like, there are just so many things that make me sad, and so it's hard for me to talk about them in a coherent way. So I really urge you to look at our footnotes page on our website, which is www.ethnicallyambiguouspod.com.
Yes, it is. And I want to make a point to say, if you have like a differing opinion or thought or something you just want to add or correct us on how we're saying something, you can tweet at us.
Mm-hmm.
Just come at us with like a normal tone. Don't like say anything catty. Don't be bitchy, because we're not good. We're humans.
We're human.
We're not going to respond to you if you're going to be like rude. But if you just go, hey, here are my thoughts.
Yeah.
Here's something that I thought you guys got wrong. Or hey, you know, I just want you to hear out I have a differing view or perspective on what you said. Just tweet us. Don't be a dick. Just tweet us. We want to hear what you have to say. Someone tweeted us from Israel about our Ahed Tamimi episode. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, what's up? Tell me what's up.
He said that we had reported a lot of incorrect things, which I was very curious about, because we were reporting straight from articles and facts.
Right. So we get a certain amount of information out here. You guys have your views and your perspectives. We're open to hearing it. We're not going to tell you to fuck yourself. Just don't come at us in any sort of way.
No.
Like, we're not here to be attacked. Like, we don't want to be attacked. If you attack us, then you're not going to get anywhere.
I mean, when someone left us a review in our early days, someone left us a review saying we were unreasonably hostile towards Israel. Our next episode was called We Are Unreasonably Hostile. So we do have our pettiness. But
don't be petty.
Yeah. Oh, wait, speaking of reviews, maybe we should bring up some reviews that I liked. Okay, Felicia on iTunes. You should also, while you're here, go to iTunes and review us and leave us a 5-star rating and help us out. But Felicia says, these girls are really funny and informative. It was such a gem to find, and these topics are rarely talked about, so it was such a treat. Love learning something new with each episode while also having something funny to listen to at work.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're listening at work.
Me too.
Hope you're actualing people about the Middle East.
But yeah, there are tons of other things, people I want to shout out, but we can get to them next time.
We'll get to it next time. We got to go. I got to eat dinner.
Oh, shit.
So follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyambig.
Mm-hmm.
AMBIG. We post some fun stuff sometimes, mostly pics of us.
And doggies sometimes.
Yeah, some puppies. Follow us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, AMB. Feel free to tweet at us. We love hearing from you. You can go to our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, where you can see our footnotes mm-hmm. and all that other fun stuff. You can
follow me in person. I live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you can follow me at Anna Hosnia on Twitter, AnnaHossniH. I know a lot of you have been trying to follow me on Instagram. I am so sorry. I am terrified of all of you. So I have a private Instagram, and I don't really let anyone I don't actually physically know in person follow me, because I'm afraid of all your judgments. I'm a timid, terrified person.
She posts a lot of pictures of her cat, and that's about it. So you're not missing out on much.
Yeah, there's nothing interesting about my life that you want to see.
You can follow me, but I'm pretty much a weirdo. Just Shiro Hero, Shiero.
Yeah, follow Shireen.
I post some weird shit, but whatever.
I'm scared of everybody, so I don't let anyone follow me.
Yeah. My one...
One day maybe I will.
We'll one see. Day my Twitter and my Instagram handles will match. But until then, on Twitter I am Shireen Y, W-H-I. W-H-Y. That's how you spell Y, the word Y. Why do I exist? Why do I die? I don't know.
And I am scared. rate, review, and subscribe. Please give us those 5-star ratings.
Yeah,
so
we can read
like,
it out.
We can feel good about ourselves. This is mostly about us. You know, like, I just want to feel vibes.
Please
like,
help me
vibes.
Feel better about this shitty episode that I just had.
Please tweet at Shireen and tell her it was good, because I thought it was good. I was quiet because I was actually just listening. I was intrigued.
I was just stumbling over everything. I hope you guys got some information out of there. But until next time.
You gonna bite that ass?
I bite that ass.